Loch Ness lies in the Glenmore of Scotland in the United Kingdom, covering more than 700 square miles and comprising of several rivers. At around 23 miles in length, it is known to have the largest volume of fresh water in Great Britain. Even so, this is not the deepest loch in Scotland, which is Loch Mora. It also isn't the largest surface area, which is Loch Lomond. That said, with 263 billion cubic feet of water, it contains more than all the lakes in England and Wales put together. It is only around 10,000 years old, after being frozen for 20,000 years during the last ice age, and it is an incredible place to visit with remarkable sights. I remember my time standing at the front of a boat as it skimmed over the deep waters, looking up at the goats that stood on precarious rocks along the cliff edges. I remember looking down into the famously dark waters below, an extremely dark green made so by the rain, consistently carrying peat from the hills. What I found was that, as you stand there, basking in the intense beauty of the Scottish landscape, a part of you can't help but wonder what lurks below the surface of this enormous place. It is no doubt that we've heard the stories and seen the images of the creature that is said to lurk there. But just how much of this is myth, and how much is based in reality? My name is Luke Mordew, and this urban legend is the Loch Ness Monster. When you venture into the beautiful lands of Scotland, you may pass Falkirk, and if you do, you'll be in luck. Here, you will find the largest equine sculpture in the world. Two horse heads seemingly rising out of the ground. However, these are not just any horses. These are Kelpies. Kelpies are known in Scottish folklore as aquatic spirits that are said to haunt the many rivers and streams across the country, often revealing themselves in the shape of a horse. However, as beautiful as they may be, they should always be addressed with caution, as these spirits are known to be malevolent. It is said that they will appear beside rivers, attracting passers-by. Parents would warn their children not to approach seemingly wild horses, as if this creature turned out to in fact be a Kelpie. And if they were to touch it, let alone get on it, they would find themselves stuck to its hide, making it impossible for them to dismount. And once the Kelpie spirit had you, it would return to the waters, taking its victim with it until you drowned, where the Kelpie spirit would then devour you. It is said that these entities can also appear in human form from time to time, either as a beautiful young woman luring men to the waters, or as a hairy man lurking by the river, ready to attack unsuspecting passers-by. In their more well-known and consistent form, though, it is said that the sound of their hoarse tail can resemble that of thunder, and if you were ever lucky enough to take hold of its bridle, you could then control it, having the power of 10 horses in one. Make sure you manage this, though, as even if you didn't find yourself stuck to their hide, they could summon a massive flood to sweep travelers away, as Arwen called them to do in The Lord of the Rings, The Fellowship of the Ring. The Kelpie are but one of the many creatures that arise from British folklore, with those of this proud nation being held firmly in the grips of the Scottish. And although the Kelpie is one of the more well-known folkloric tales from Gaelic lands, it remains overshadowed by one of the most famous legends in the world. In my telling of an encounter with the Loch Ness Monster, we will follow Duncan, Rory, and Callum out on the loch during a week of illegal hunting. The infamous liquid sun had finally subsided over the loch, although the air remained damp against the thick fog surrounding the large hills. Duncan and Rory stood by the bow of their shipping boat, admiring the views as Callum controlled the ship from the wheelhouse. It was a cold and wet day, far darker than they had hoped it would be when they arranged to take out the boat on these waters. But they wouldn't let that dampen their spirits. The previous day's hunt in the Highlands wasn't as fruitful as they had hoped, especially as they had kept it low-key as possible due to their lack of license. Callum had talked them into it a few years prior, and they had continued to do so every few months since. They hadn't been caught yet, and by now, they were getting cocky with it. However, today would be less risky anyway, as they were only fishing. Duncan and Rory studied the goats, seemingly floating against the rocks, amazed by their skill in balancing on such a steep cliff edge. But this peaceful moment of animal watching was quickly interrupted by the sharp click of a gun from behind. They turned to see Callum standing by the wheelhouse, with a rifle up against his face, a proud smirk along with it. "You reckon I could get one?" he asked with a devilish grin. Duncan shook his head, telling him there would be no point as they couldn't get them from the boat anyway. "Look at them all against the rocks," he answered. "It'll be like an arcade game." He smirked before lowering the gun with a snigger, quickly removing the conversation onto fishing. He placed his weapon back into the wheelhouse before stepping out onto the bow with the others, confidently exclaiming that today he was going to get the biggest catfish they had ever seen. One so big, you'll think it was Nessie herself. They laughed to each other as they cracked open some beers, gulping it away as they ventured deeper into the grey fog of the loch. They hadn't seen people in some time now, after venturing out further than any tourist boats would go. But even so, none of the men had caught anything yet, as if every living thing in the area had been scared away. The men sat patiently, enjoying the fact that they had been so hidden away from any prying eyes in the fog. The boat's engine was switched off, and their radio had been turned down quietly, leaving room for the sounds of the small waves that gently swayed the boat from side to side. None of the men had said a word to each other for a while, all just sipping away at their beers and enjoying the relaxing rocking of the water. Duncan had even found himself beginning to doze off, resting his head against the edge of the boat as his eyes slowly shut. But it was just then that something grabbed his attention. A hefty slap against the water from behind. He quickly lifted his head and turned around, looking out into the grey mist over the dark waters below. If that was a fish, it was a big one. He turned back to the other two, who had seemingly noticed nothing, although they were a little closer to the radio that quietly played out a tinny 80s pop song from the ground. He turned back to the waters, focusing his eyes on anything he could get them on, when something caught his attention. He wasn't sure what he was looking at, but through the greyness, he could see a large shape slowly rising into the air. He squinted his eyes, edging closer to the boat's edge, as if those extra few inches would make any difference to his view. "Guys, check this out," he called to the others, refusing to take his eyes off of it. But at the sound of his voice, the long shape suddenly curved into the water and dived below. The men peeked towards him, curious by what he was looking at, with Rory getting to his feet and walking over to Duncan. "You're gonna think I'm off my rocker, but," he whispered before turning to them excitedly, "I think I just saw Nessie." Rory turned back to Callum as they both shared a laugh at Duncan's expense. But before they could even respond, the boat suddenly lifted and dropped over a large swell of water, as if something had quickly swum underneath them. Rory grabbed the wheelhouse doorframe to keep himself upright, whilst Duncan gripped the side. Callum, on the other hand, quickly threw his head over the edge of the boat to get a better look at what it was. "What the hell was that?" Rory asked, a slight dash of horror in his voice. Callum quickly jumped up as he crept back towards the wheelhouse, refusing to take his eyes off the water. There's two of them, he whispered before quickly darting inside, causing Duncan to jump. The adrenaline was pumping through their bodies, with both Duncan and Callum mystified and horrified by the sight. Rory watched them both curiously, feeling nervous but still waiting for them to burst into laughter, admitting it was just a prank. Callum stepped back onto the bow, now gripping his rifle tightly in his hand, announcing to the boat that they were all about to become world famous. Duncan tried to convince him otherwise, but there was no way Callum would miss up on the chance of the most valuable hunt known to man. He sharply turned to the wheelhouse and began to climb it, sitting on the roof to get the best vantage point possible. "I see them," Callum exclaimed, lining his sight into the lock. Rory followed the line of fire to the waters ahead, edging ever so slightly closer to it as the awe-inspiring sight of the sea ripples registered in his mind. Something significant was heading in their direction, on its way to pass the boat, as if curious about their arrival. "It has a baby," Callum whispered whilst preparing to take the shot. Duncan darted to the other side of the boat, peering over the edge as he watched the enormous shadow of a long, thick beast pass under the water. Callum was right. It was not alone, as with it was a much smaller, paler creature swimming beside it, just as a whale would with its mother. In an instant, Rory's eyes filled with tears as the incredible realization hit him. The Loch Ness Monster was real. However, this incredible moment of wonder was instantly shaken as the sound of Callum's rifle echoed through the vast hills, shooting straight at the fin of the smaller of the monsters. Rory now also darted forward, joining Duncan at the edge as the creatures disappeared into the darkness of the water with the gentle sounds of an unidentified animal's cry. Callum quickly jumped from the roof, almost squealing with excitement as he landed on the bow, proudly exclaiming that he got the little one. Duncan and Rory didn't react, simply staring over the edge of the boat into the dark water in the hopes of seeing something again. They didn't know how they felt. They were so overwhelmed with feelings about it all, excited but horrified by the idea of being the first people to capture the Loch Ness Monster. Although now, it was silent. It was as if nothing had ever happened, with the boat now gently swaying side to side in peaceful tranquility. But then, before they could even discuss it, the three men were in the air as the boat suddenly flipped after being rammed hard from the depths. Duncan landed by the upturned boat, struggling to breathe as he clambered back to the surface. Callum landed further out, instantly letting go of his now useless rifle as he struggled to stay afloat. Rory was the luckiest of the three, landing on the other side of the boat, not too far from the shoreline. None of the men had time to think, darting in their chosen directions as fast as they could. Duncan wanted nothing more than to get out of the water, and so he began attempting to climb onto the boat, whilst Callum swam towards him as fast as he could. Rory decided it was best to get out of the lock completely and instantly turned, swimming as fast as he could to shore. Duncan began to call out to Callum, screaming his name in horror, but before he could get to the boat, his splashes subsided as he sharply dropped out of sight into the water. This caused a horrified acceptance to reign over Duncan, who continued to scream out Callum's name as he continued his efforts to get on the boat. Rory had now made it to land, pulling himself away from the water against the small rocks as fast as he could. He gathered all the breath he had left to call out to Duncan, telling him he needed to get out of the lock. But Duncan replied that he couldn't. It was clear by his tone of voice and frantic thrashing in the water that he was panicking. But both knew that the longer he was in the water, the longer he remained in grave danger. After a few moments, Duncan had cleared his mind a little and accepted that he would not be able to climb onto this boat. Rory had now gotten to his feet, screaming encouragement to his friend to ensure that he swam. Eventually, Rory counted down from three, commanding Duncan to swim as fast as possible. Duncan pushed himself from the boat and began to swim, skimming through the water at high speed. He was making good progress, but as Rory continued his shouts of encouragement, he felt his throat tighten at the sight of the large swell that had risen behind Duncan. It was coming. Rory screamed again, demanding Duncan swim faster, who tried to do so, causing his arms to flail slightly more and frantically splash in the water as he desperately attempted to reach the shore. Still, it was too late, as the enormous, dark shadow rose from below. At an incredible speed, a serpent-like head shot out of the water, gripping Duncan's thigh in its teeth as it did, raising him into the air as it continued. Its long neck rose high above the loch, almost disappearing behind the thick fog already engulfing the boat behind them. With a loud screech, the monster flung its head back before slamming forward, letting go of Duncan's leg. This caused Duncan to slam hard into the water with a horrified yelp, sinking him deep into the depths below. Rory jumped back on the spot, pressing his back against the large rocks behind him, desperate to stay as far away from the water as possible, his eyes fixated on the incredible creature that stood before him. It was so elegant and streamlined, yet so large and powerful. With the majority of its body still hidden away from sight in the darkness of the water, he could only imagine how big it was in full, and he could only hope it could not come onto land. The creature remained watching him through the thickness of the fog, its hazel eyes seemingly staring into Rory's with threatening intent. But then, at the sounds of her young's groan from the waters once again, it simply turned and dove back into the loch in the opposite direction. Tears were now streaming down Rory's face as his knees buckled, dropping him to the floor as he rested his back against the rock. His entire body was shaking. Within minutes, his whole life had changed forever. And apart from the upturned boat that now sat gently swaying in the quiet waves, it was as if nothing had happened. The air was peaceful and calm once again, whilst the waters remained steady and consistent as they had always been. There was no sign of the monster, or any real sign that it had ever been there to begin with, now disappearing into the shadows of the Loch Ness. Once again, returning to legend. Those who believe in the stories of the Loch Ness Monster have been able to track down several references to the mysterious creature, dating as far back as 500 AD. The Picts were a group of people that resided in the north of Britain during the Middle Ages, with much of what we know of their culture carved in stone. It is amongst these carvings, way back when, that we find images of a strange aquatic creature embedded amongst them, not far from the loch, which is Gaelic for lake. The earliest written reports of a Loch Ness monster were made as far back as the 7th century AD, appearing in The Life of St. Columba, written by Adam Nann. In his tale, written around a century after the events had supposedly happened, an Irish monk named St. Columba was staying in the land of the Picts with his companion when they found a group of locals burying a man by the River Ness. After inquiring, they would tell him that the deceased had been swimming in the river and had been attacked by what they called a water beast. They had reportedly attempted to help him by rescue boat. However, the beast had mauled him to death before dragging him into the depths of the water. St. Columba couldn't leave it at this, and so he instructed one of his loyal followers, Lugni Moko Min, to swim across the river, which he did, and as expected, drew the attention of the water beast. However, as the creature approached the follower, Columba held up the sign of the Holy Cross and demanded it to go no further. Do not touch the man. Go back at once. This caused the creature to stop in its tracks, as if it had been pulled back by ropes, leaving it with no choice but to turn and flee. The story of a beast in these waters so far back in time is, of course, compelling, and believers in the Loch Ness Monster have used this tale to demonstrate just how long it is said to have existed. However, skeptics doubt the story's reliability as a genuine encounter with the Loch Ness Monster, as not only was this based in the River Ness instead of Loch Ness, but it was also one of many water beast tales shared around this time. This was likely one of many stories just like it, with it only being brought up by many believers due to its seemingly close connection to the modern legend. In 1980, the Swedish naturalist and author Bengt Sjögren wrote that present beliefs in lake monsters are associated with the legend of the Kelpie, with accounts changing over time. He claims that initially, many of these descriptions were horse-like creatures intended to keep children away from deep waters. However, over time, this legend has blended with our greater understanding of science, becoming the slightly more realistic plesiosaur. In fact, a study made of pre-1933 Highland folklore references kelpies, water horses, and water bulls most frequently in Loch Ness. There may be stories of monsters dwelling in various waters that have continued to be shared for thousands of years, with many still being told even today. So what is it about the Loch Ness Monster that has compelled the world so far and wide? It is partly due to its incredible setting, partly to its mystery and wonder, and partly due to just how often this monster is said to have been witnessed. I hope you're enjoying this chapter so far, and we will return to it. But first, I wanted to steal you away for a moment. I love what I do, and delving into the history of urban legends and folklore is as fascinating as it is rewarding. I feel fortunate to have thousands of people listening to my research each week. The kind messages I receive are both heartwarming and reassuring. However, it takes a very long time to create each chapter. And no matter how much I enjoy it, doing this for free is not always a possibility, leading to significant gaps between seasons, gaps that I hope to shorten in the future, and this is where your support is needed. Through Patreon, you can subscribe for as little as £3 a month, less than a latte at your local barista. By doing so, you will receive all episodes without any advertisements or breaks. You'll also be able to listen to each chapter the Friday before the general public. On top of this, you'll receive a weekly newsletter and discounts on merchandise. We're not just building a community there, but forging a fellowship of folklore enthusiasts. Join our private group chats, where you can share your stories, theories, and discoveries with like-minded individuals captivated by modern myths. Let's discover what you've heard, what you may want to hear, or what you think of any specific legend. Your support on Patreon isn't just a subscription. It's an investment in preserving our urban legend show. Please help us continue our journey and in return, become part of our team. Not only that, but if you join us today, you'll be entered into a prize draw where I'll be choosing 8 patron names at random before the next season begins. Once contacted, if permission is granted, you will be written into one of our new stories, putting you within the legends we tell. Visit our Patreon page by following the link in our show notes, clicking subscribe, and paying whatever you can afford to give. I look forward to your support as we continue to unravel folklore together. And now, back to the legend. Many apparent sightings throughout history are told as folklore, blurring the lines between what is fact and what is fiction. In 1852, there were stories of villagers rushing to the loch with pitchforks to battle what they believed to be a sea serpent. However, when they arrived, it turned out to be simply a pony in the water. The next sighting of note was that of Dee McKenzie, who, in October of either 1871 or 1872, laid witness to an object resembling a log or an upturned boat. He described it as wriggling and churning up the water, moving slowly at first, before disappearing with great speed. However, it is worth noting that this story would not be shared until much later, a year after the apparent Loch Ness Monster had blown up as a news story. There is a reported sighting in 1888 by Alexander MacDonald, who described to water bailiff Alex Campbell that he witnessed a large, stubby-legged animal that resembled a salamander surfacing from the loch before propelling itself only 50 yards from where he stood. But it was in 1933 that stories of a Loch Ness Monster truly kicked off, with the legend changing the area's reputation for all time. It was on the 2nd of May, 1933, as an article was published in the Inverness Courier about an immense beast or a whale-like fish. This article was written by Alex Campbell, who, as well as a water bailiff, was also working as a part-time journalist. In it, he discussed a sighting shared by Aldie McKay, where she and her husband saw an enormous creature with the body of a whale rolling in the loch whilst they drove on the A82 the previous month. It would be in this article that the word monster would first be assigned to the being that was said to lurk under the waters of Loch Ness. However, some have claimed that this term was coined by the editor, Evan Barron. A segment of the article reads, "The creature disported itself, rolling and plunging for fully a minute, its body resembling that of a whale, and the water cascading and churning like a simmering cauldron. Soon, however, it disappeared in a boiling mass of foam." Both onlookers confessed that there was something uncanny about the whole thing, as they realized that here was no ordinary denizen of the depths, because apart from its enormous size, the beast, in taking the final plunge, sent out waves that were big enough to have been caused by a passing steamer. In the late 1980s, Aldie would admit in an interview that she had heard stories of a beast that was said to dwell in the loch long before her reported sightings. And in the 1933 article itself, it was stated that Loch Ness has for generations been credited with being the home of a fearsome-looking monster. Another famously reported sighting was said to have occurred on the 22nd of July, 1933, when George Spicer and his wife witnessed a most extraordinary form of animal step out onto the road in front of them to cross. They described it as having a large body, around 4 feet in height, and around 25 feet in length, with a very long, wavy, narrow neck. Although they never reported seeing any limbs on the creature. It is said that it lurched across the road, heading towards the nearby lock, leaving a trail of devastation behind it. George Spicer would say it was the nearest approach to a dragon or a prehistoric animal I have ever seen in my life. He also said that it had an animal in its mouth, and that its body was big, with a high back, whilst also guessing that instead of feet, it must have been of the web kind due to there being no limbs on show. He would also struggle to confirm if he saw a tail, as it had moved so rapidly that by the time they got near to where it was, it had most likely already disappeared into the lock. It was on the 4th of August of that same year that the Courier published this reported sighting, and this, in turn, would set off a massive amount of public interest. And of course, this led to more and more sightings being reported, with them now becoming commonplace around the lock, whilst many searched for what had now been named the Loch Ness Monster. Late that autumn, things would blow up further, as now there were claims of photographic evidence. It was on the 12th of November 1933 that Hugh Gray took a photograph that he claimed to be depicting the monster. This picture was, of course, black and white, hand blurred, which made it very difficult to decipher what audiences were looking at. Hugh Gray was in the area as he was taking his Labrador for a walk, and according to many, it is this dog fetching a stick from the lock that is what's in the frame, with some even claiming that if you look close enough, you can make out the dog's head. Some have other ideas, suggesting it is a picture of an otter or a swan. It had been consistently said that the original negative was lost. However, back in 1963, zoologist Maurice Burton came into possession of two lantern slides of the original negative, and these revealed what has been described as an otter rolling at the surface in characteristic fashion. Unfortunately, after looking at this image, it does seem to fit this description quite well. Early the following year, at 1 a.m. on the 5th of January, 1934, a motorcyclist by the name of Arthur Grant claimed to have nearly hit the creature whilst he was approaching Abriaken, which is near the northeastern end of their lock. He described it as having a small head attached to a long neck, which seemed to cross between a seal and a plesiosaur. This was an interesting description, as Arthur Grant himself was a veterinary student and knew animals quite well. He would later produce a sketch for Maurice Burton, who would once again claim that the sighting was nothing but an otter, being a blend of poor lighting and exaggerated memories. It would be on the 21st of April, 1934, that the story of the Loch Ness Monster would be solidified in the zeitgeist, when the Daily Mail published a photograph supposedly taken by Robert Kenneth Wilson, a gynecologist from London. However, Robert didn't want his name associated with it, so the picture would go on to be known as the surgeon's photograph. According to Robert, he was out admiring the lock when he saw the monster amongst the water. He claims that he quickly pulled out his camera and took four pictures. However, only two of these came out clearly, with the first showing the head, neck, and back of the incredible creature, whilst the second showed its head in a position ready to dive. The first of these pictures would become the famous photograph published in the newspapers, the one you are most likely picturing in your head right now. The second picture did not pick up traction anywhere near as close as the first, most likely due to the blurriness of it. For decades, this picture was seen as evidence of the Loch Ness Monster's existence, comparable to the incredible footage reportedly captured of the Sasquatch in the Patterson-Gimlin film. And by the second half of the 20th century, as Bigfoot lived as the king of the cryptids, it would seem that the Loch Ness Monster now reigned as the queen. Much like the Patterson-Gimlin footage, the surgeon's photograph was heavily scrutinized and studied by skeptics, often dismissed as driftwood, an otter, a bird, or even an elephant. What was most damning about this picture, though, was that it had seemingly been cropped to make the creature look bigger than it was, with the waves it was creating being far more familiar as smaller ripples. In 1993, the makers of the documentary Loch Ness Discovered analyzed the photograph, concluding that the famous object said to be the large monster was no bigger than 3 feet in length. By 1994, the photograph was widely accepted as a hoax. The story behind the creation of this image and the apparent reasons for its existence is fascinating in itself, and is a story worth telling. Marmaduke Wetherill was an actor, screenwriter, and big game hunter who had found himself at the lock to hunt down this incredible beast at the behest of the Daily Mail. Whilst there, he came across some incredibly unfamiliar footprints that were very large nearby. He excitedly sent a cast of these prints to scientists to be tested, which would uncover the truth. These were the prints of a hippopotamus, laid there by a prankster who had used a hippopotamus foot umbrella stand as a trick. As a result, Marmaduke was publicly ridiculed by his employer, embarrassing him in the process. However, rather than sitting back and moving on from this, Marmaduke decided to seek revenge by enacting a prank of his own. He would later team up with his son-in-law, Christian Sperling, his son Ian Wetherill, and Maurice Chambers. Ian would get the materials together, buying a toy submarine from F.W. Woolworths, using this as a base before extending and reshaping it with putty. The Loch Ness Monster, as it would always be seen to have existed, would now arrive. First, the group would test their creation in a nearby pond before taking it to the lock for its official photo shoot, with Ian taking the pictures until a water bailiff reportedly arrived, leaving Marmaduke no choice but to quickly sink the model with his foot. It is said that to this very day, this infamous makeshift monster still sits at the bottom of the lock, as it has never been discovered. Maurice Chambers would take these photographic plates to a friend of his called Wilson, a lover of practical jokes. He would, in turn, take these to Ogston's, a chemist in Inverness, where George Morrison would develop them. He would then sell these pictures to the Daily Mail, where the article would first go out as the surgeon's photograph. A few years later, on the 29th of May 1938, a South African tourist named G.E. Taylor filmed something swimming in the lock for 3 minutes on 16mm colour film, although Maurice Burton would appear again, concluding that it was nothing but a floating object and not an animal. In 1960, an aeronautical engineer named Tim Dinsdale reportedly saw something in the water on his final day of search, describing it as being reddish with a scar on its side. He would go on to say that by the time he had mounted his camera, the creature had begun to move, although he managed to shoot 40 feet of film. Many have claimed that whatever this was, it was a living thing, whilst others have suggested it's just a boat, with a man even being said to be visible once the contrast is increased. Interestingly though, during the previously mentioned 1993 documentary, Loch Ness Discovered, someone had enhanced the footage and noticed a shadow in the negative that had not been clear in the developed film. A shadow that suggested the rear body of a giant creature in the water. On the 26th of May 2007, a 55-year-old laboratory technician named Gordon Holmes would videotape what he described as this jet-black thing, about 14 meters long, moving fairly fast in the water. This would gain the attention of BBC Scotland and has even been described as the best footage ever seen. With mysterious shapes breaking the water above and appearing on sonar readings from below. There are so many, in fact, that if I were to list them all, this chapter would go on for far too long. And so, I have stuck to the more noteworthy of them. Although, it is also worth noting that even with the sheer amount of sightings and apparent photographic evidence, there has yet to be anything conclusive found, and scientists remain unconvinced. This hasn't discouraged the hunt, though, which continues today. One of the first of these official hunts was almost 100 years ago, in 1934, when 20 men with binoculars and cameras positioned themselves around the lock from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. every day for 5 weeks. Over this time, 21 photographs were taken, although none were of note. In 1962, the Loch Ness Phenomena Investigation Bureau was formed to study the loch, intended to identify the creature known as the Loch Ness Monster, or to determine the causes of the reports of it. In 1972, a group of researchers from the Academy of Applied Science, led by Robert Rhines, searched the loch. This included a submersible camera with a floodlight, which he would turn on to take pictures whenever the sonar detected anything of note. This would eventually pick up on something strange, with data examiners suggesting that a large shape described as a highly flexible, laterally flattened tail was found. This compelling picture would go on to be known as the Flipper photograph. Two were taken, both showing what seemed to be the same flipper in slightly different positions, which did suggest movement. Although, the first of the two images is far more famous than the other. These photographs have been held under much scrutiny, and the legitimacy of Roberts himself was questioned when it was discovered that several claims he had made regarding his scientific history had proven to be lies. Some have even gone as far as to claim that the flipper itself had been cheated, literally being superimposed onto the image to create nothing but another fake. Although, Rhines did deny this. That said, he did admit that the photograph may have been retouched by a magazine editor before printing. Over the years, Rhines has released numerous photographs claiming to capture images of Nessie herself, although none have stood up to much scrutiny. In 2003, the BBC sponsored a search of the loch using 600 sonar beams and satellite tracking systems. With this significant amount of technological power behind it, the intention was to prove once and for all whether Loch Ness is indeed home to the elusive being. Unfortunately, though, no animal of substantial size was ever found, and although the scientists involved had remained hopeful, they were reported to have accepted that this proved that the Loch Ness Monster was nothing but a modern myth. In its earlier days, it was noted that the creature resembled the now extinct plesiosaur, a long-necked aquatic reptile that fell extinct during the Cretaceous-Paleogene extinction event. However, paleontologists have been keen to point out that the osteology of the dinosaur's neck makes it impossible for the plesiosaur to have ever lifted its head in a swan-like fashion out of water. Not only that, but plesiosaurs were what we would consider tropical creatures, and were more than likely cold-blooded, making it impossible for them to survive in the notoriously cold winters of the loch. Then there is the glaringly obvious question that comes up repeatedly when discussing cryptids like this. Where are the bones? You would think after all this time searching, we would have found any indication of their existence, whether dead or alive. Now, the era of the Loch Ness Monster being a potential ancestor of the plesiosaur has long passed, with it now being understood by most as a serpent-like being, with our interpretations of what it is morphing over the years. However, at the beginning of these earlier descriptions, there is a fascinating notion that the silver screen inspired the monster itself. It is undeniable that popular film affects our societies, whether it be tourist destinations, fashion, phrases, and attitudes. One of the main reasons I adore many art forms is due to how thought-provoking and impactful they can be, sometimes purposely, and at times, entirely by accident. In the late 1800s and early 1900s, dinosaurs were still very new discoveries. Thanks to stories like The Lost World by Arthur Conan Doyle, these newly discovered monsters had become palatable in ways they may not have been before. Museum exhibitions now showed evidence of these incredible beings, leaving audiences in awe and wonder as their imaginations ran wild about whether any of these creatures could still be out there. This was used heavily in a film that, very curiously, released the same year the sightings of the Loch Ness Monster began picking up steam, 1933. King Kong was an epic adventure featuring a giant ape fighting several other monsters throughout the film. However, the most noteworthy in this context is the sea monster. This creature looked so strikingly similar to the Loch Ness Monster descriptions that if the film was released only a few months later, you would believe that this creature was meant to be Nessie herself. The original stories and descriptions of the Loch Ness Monster may have been heavily influenced by the new groundbreaking film released months prior, but this does not change the fact that the creature is still believed to exist amongst many, even today. Gary Campbell and his wife Kathy have gone as far as to create the Loch Ness Monster Sightings Register, listing over 1,300 sightings in its database, ranging from the historic to the modern. He has been quoted as saying, "If this was a court of law, and over 1,000 eyewitnesses were saying roughly the same thing, the verdict wouldn't be in doubt." Eyewitness testimony is curious, as it has been repeatedly proven to be unreliable. Not only do our minds add and subtract elements to fit our preconceived narratives, but when blended with fear and adrenaline, we can also misinterpret size and shapes. That's not to mention our old friend pareidolia, which often comes up in our chapters regarding shadowy figures that are said to be seen, but not seen. With this in mind, there are several contenders for mistaken identity. One of which is the Greenland shark, an animal that, according to zoologist and television presenter Jeremy Wade, could have found its way into the loch. This animal has been described as being up to 20 feet in length, inhabiting the North Atlantic Ocean around Canada, Greenland, Iceland, and Norway. Some have suggested that sightings could be a notably large catfish. Others have gone on to suggest that most of the sightings are likely just logs or debris flowing down the water. This wouldn't account for all the sightings, of course, although it does seem possible to be part of many of them. Then there are the optical effects that may be taking place. If you are actively looking for strange shapes and shadows in the waters for an extended period, you will likely eventually, with enough will, mistake a strange wave or animal for the head of a beast. Then, there is the most relevant of all these theories, that it is in fact an eel which is found in the Loch Ness. Any that may have grown considerably larger would spark fright in someone looking out for the monster. However, not everyone agrees with this notion, as it has been pointed out that eels swim side to side, which no sighting of the beast has suggested. Although, with that notion of a plesiosaur-like being becoming outdated, locals now claim it to be more serpent-like shaped, which would fit rather well with the theory that this is a giant eel. During 2018 and 2019, New Zealand scientist Neil Gemmell undertook a massive project to document every organism found in the Loch Ness through DNA sampling. The results, released in 2019, showed that around 3,000 different species were present in the waters, with most living at a microscopic level. Although, alongside them were 11 fish species, 20 mammals, and 3 amphibians. What is most notable though, other than the fact that no reptile DNA was found, was the abundance of eels appearing in almost every water sample. He specified that although it's not likely, there may be eels of unusual size in the waters. That being said, for hopeful believers who may be disappointed by these findings, around 20 to 25% of the DNA samples found couldn't be matched to any known species due to several factors and limitations. This, of course, could leave the door open for one of those to be the creature lovingly known as Nessie. However, with all I found, I remain unconvinced. The Loch Ness Monster has become such a popular part of Scottish culture, drawing in over 1 million people to the region each year, bringing estimates of £25 million to the local economy. No longer is it a legend amongst the British Isles, it is now a key cryptid worldwide, with its design recognisable by most. People fly from around the world for the hunt, but if you find yourself wanting to dive into the loch yourself in search of the monster, but cannot afford a trip right now, you can still explore, thanks to the people at Google, who charmingly added a feature to Google Street View in commemoration of 81 years since the surgeon's photograph was released. Here, they set one of their Trekker cameras to the bottom of a boat, allowing us to now venture through the waters from the comfort of our homes worldwide. It was as recent as August 2023 that a vast hunt was undertaken by people from around the globe in search of the monster, which was covered on various news stations, including the BBC, marking it as one of the biggest hunts for the monster in 50 years. And with this in mind, it seems that although Nessie may not truly be lurking under the deep waters of the loch, she will remain deep in our society's psyche for many more years to come.
Urban Legends is researched, written, and produced by Luke Mordew. Original score by Billy Jupp, with additional sounds from storyblocks.com. If you like what you heard and want to hear more, click subscribe on your chosen podcast provider and delve into the mysteries of our previous and future chapters. To find more, including merchandise, video content, images, and more, visit urbanlegendsfolklore.com. If you have more information or a correction on something mentioned in this chapter, please get in touch through our website. We aim to ensure that all information provided is accurate and up to date, and this remains a top priority. If you want to support the show, receive early access, and have more of a say in what we do, then become a patron by clicking the link in our show notes. For these chapters in video format, simply search Urban Legends Folklore on YouTube. Follow us on TikTok, Instagram, and Threads, and join our Facebook group by searching Urban Legends Folklore.